Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 9, Chapter 17. Dex's head was pounding when his system woke him the next morning. He couldn't remember the last time he'd felt so bad, but then again, he couldn't remember the last time he'd stayed up so late and put such a dent in the rum bottle either. He stumbled into the lab and rooted around in the small cabinet for the bottle of Langfish and took a small slurp. The stuff tasted like a cross between mud and high-fructose corn syrup, but he'd gotten used to it long ago. When it hit his gut, he immediately began to feel better, and once the water was gone and the blower was drying him in the room, his headache had reduced to a dull throb. He dressed in casual clothes, comfortable enough to spend the day in his chair while working online, but decent enough that if he had to go out, he wouldn't have to change. Now that he worked from home, Dex was careful to avoid the temptation to just wear the one piece, or worse. He grabbed a food brick from the box in the cupboard and felt around to gauge how many were left. His hand brushed against the almost empty cardboard container, so he made a reminder on his system to get another box. He got a mug of coffee going in the zapper and stuffed half the gooey food bar in his mouth. Chewing, he pulled the steaming mug out of the zapper and sat at the small pull-down table. He leaned back in his chair, sipping his coffee, and propped his feet up on the end of the bed. He went online and materialized in his M-City office in more or less the same position as he'd left his body back in Nice. No coffee and no food, but feet up and pensive. He looked at the leftmost corner of his desk and the small metal tray labeled In. There were several notes and a small package bound in brown paper. He smiled to himself, enjoying Annabelle's detail work. He knew that if he logged into his usual messenger client, he'd see a few pings and a file transfer waiting for him, but he liked the anachronistic feel of the paper mail that Annabelle's representation of his messages made when he was here in his office. He scanned through the notes first. There was a reminder from Javier, the keyboardist and impromptu leader of Chemical Celeste, reminding him about the gig the following night. Annabelle had sent a brief thank you for dinner and a reminder about Dex's promise of stolen hours at a hot sheet motel. He grinned at the thought and moved on. The last note was from Reverend Martina Alford, ostensibly drawing his attention to the file she'd sent under separate cover, but he guessed that she was really prodding Dex for an update. He had nothing to tell the Reverend, so hoped that poking through the file she sent would make him feel like he was doing something to earn his fee. He pulled out the brown paper package from the in-tray and tore open the thin covering. Inside was a sheaf of paper with a covering note. Mr. Dexter, I'm sorry, but after a long discussion at a congregational meeting, it was decided that we are not willing to divulge the complete list of our congregation members. Privacy is central to our members, and we cannot see that the release of this information would be valuable enough to justify its cost. However, the leadership of the congregation has agreed to share their names and contact information with you. Please find enclosed the complete list of the Board of Directors, Lay Service Leaders, and Building Committee. I trust that the discretion you promised will extend to these names, and hope to hear from you soon. Reverend M. Alford. Dex sighed. He never understood why clients would go to the bother of hiring an investigator, then refuse to provide the basic information needed to conduct a thorough investigation. How did they think he could work without all the data? It was maddening. There were about 50 names altogether, and Dex doubted that any of them would be able to shed any light on the investigation. But he couldn't just ignore the information, so he brought up his system console and began to peck out a script. He was no programmer, but anyone could put together rudimentary search or reference scripts, even Dax. He didn't know what he was looking for, so he decided to ask the script to get biographical information on all the people on the list and match it to anything on the case file. He was just about ready to set the script loose when he added another line asking for secondary matches to data in any of his case files. You just never knew when things might be related after all, he thought. He knew that his query would take some time to run, so sat back in the chair for a moment. He rubbed a hand over his face and thought. After a moment, he lifted his feet off the desk and lurched forward as the seat tilted back to its proper position. He opened the lower right-hand desk drawer and pulled out his bottle of whiskey. He eyed it suspiciously, then poured a generous measure into one of the tumblers he also kept in the drawer. He flicked open the menu, listing possible neurostimulants which could be consumed as part of his drink. Dex wasn't a big user of stims. In fact, he'd only ever tried them a few times. He'd never really enjoyed the effects, but his finger hovered over the menu choice for focus. He knew it was a mild bit of pharma that helped rid one of distractions and think more clearly on a particular problem. Dex wondered if it would help. He'd never felt particularly in need of focus before, either with or without the trademark, but he felt stuck on this case. His finger mashed the selector and he chose the smallest dose of the stim. He confirmed the selection and filed the receipt in the delete bucket. He looked at the whiskey glass, trying to see if it looked any different. It didn't. He lifted the glass to his nose and sniffed. Peaty single malt, nothing unusual there. He took a tiny sip, more like wetting his lips with the stuff rather than taking a real drink, and tasted nothing other than the simulated loamy liquor. He frowned and put the drink back down on his desk. He pulled up a connection to the public boards. News, opinion, sports scores, all were available on some page or another. He ran a search for Light of the Simulacrum and sat back to read what the rest of the world thought about his client. Dex wasn't surprised to find just about every possible view represented. He found a fair number of people boasting about how the Light of the Simulacrum had changed their lives, how they finally found a spiritual home in this complex multiversed existence. He skimmed over the glowing praise quickly. He'd gotten a better feel for the faith's beliefs from the Reverend, without the saccharine and pious hyperbole. At the other end of the spectrum were the haters. This group broke down into two main categories. One was comprised of the folks from rival religious denominations denouncing the similes as blasphemers or infidels. The other was the adamantly anti-religious types, who included the LOS along with the other faiths that were ruining reason, undercutting science, and destroying freedom of thought. Aside from them, there were the handful of posters who had specific complaints about the LOS. Some took issue with its theology, others with its aesthetic, and for some it was hard to pin down exactly what their objections were. Obviously, not everyone with access to a board and a typing or dictation tool was competent to use such things. Dex glanced at the glass of whiskey plus sitting on his desk. He didn't feel any different, but he'd hardly even had a taste of the neurostim. Even though he knew better, it still felt like cheating to use enhancers, and he couldn't shake the feeling. He left the glass alone and tried to get a handle on things naturally. He started methodically, first with the other religious people. He wasn't interested in their particular arguments. It seemed to him that they all fundamentally broke down to, you don't believe what I believe, therefore you are wrong and must be stopped. To Dex, the details were irrelevant and uninteresting. Instead, he paid attention to the vehemence in the tone, and the few screeds which bordered on advocating violence or destruction. There was one poster who really stuck out, a reformed Calvinist called J. Beck. Beck had numerous postings attacking the LOS, and they were all full of vitriol. In the arguments, which Dex distilled down to basically being an issue with the simile's acceptance of multis, the Calvinist attacked the congregation, their beliefs, and even Reverend Alfred personally. Dex focused on one post specifically. These so-called people expect us to permit, nay, even accept their participation in the spiritual life of the community. They are polluting the minds of unsuspecting innocents with their seductive talk of expanding one's mind in order to reach unity with the divine. They even have the gall to say that merely participating in one of their services in that travesty of a building they call a temple is a way to unite with the divine. We, the truly God-fearing people, should show these heathens what idolatry is. That abomination of a church should be taken down to the invisible bits of man-made code that it really is. Then maybe they will see that they have been worshipping a creation of the beast, not an aspect of God. The theology was beyond Dex. but his eye caught the statement about the building. Dex poked around, trying to find out more about Beck, particularly whether or not the posts were widely read or if it was more like the millions of publicly accessible but widely ignored online diaries. It turned out that Beck was a member in good standing at a Reformed Calvinist church in Europa, but was not part of said congregation's leadership. Reading between the lines in his scans of the church's newsletter, Dex guessed that Beck's strong opinions were barely tolerated among the church leaders, and not widely followed within or without the congregation. Using one of the many extremely useful utilities Annabelle had given him, Dex checked the logs of Beck's posts, and found that Dex himself was probably Beck's most loyal reader. Beck wouldn't be inciting anyone to do harm if no one was listening, he thought. Beck's own bio made it clear that the poster lacked the skills to be personally responsible for the attack. A self-professed abhorrer of M-City, Beck worked as a clerk in a physical world store and even claimed never to have visited the online world. Probably not an elite cracker, Dex guessed, and the tone of the writing made it seem like Beck was much more of a barker than a biter. Regardless, Dex used the Contact Me link on Beck's board and sent a vaguely worded request for an interview. He included the link to his office in M-City, wondering if Beck really had never visited the virtual world. After the message was sent, Dex continued on. The anti-religious posters were more reasoned in their arguments, but even there Dex found a possible suspect. K. Maddie Barton wrote several articles about the problems she perceived in the various newer religious movements. She was mainly focused on critiques of the New Revelators, the Fortean Army, and the Light of the Simulacrum. The main basis for all her arguments was the same, that religion was no more than a set of imagined stories which made people docile, stupid, and malleable. She argued that the leaders of any religion always got some tangible benefit to the acquisition of followers, usually cash, and that the followers got little more than fairy tales which made their lives seem meaningful. Her particular beef with the LOS was that their focus on the virtual world as an aspect of the divine appealed to modern people who would otherwise not have been tempted by religion. Dex thought that while this very well may be true, it wasn't in and of itself an argument against the group. But Barton banged on about how the similes used their relationship with M-City as an unfair recruiting device. Ultimately, she argued, if their temple, a hip-looking virtual hangout space, was no longer available, their numbers would drop, and one more blight on the face of reason would be removed. Dex saw that her posts were well followed, and trolled through the comments to her screed against the Light of the Simulacrum. There were several comments which distilled down to, I agree, and the requisite number of, you're always wrong, and look, here you are, being wrong again. He didn't find anyone who offered to go out and do the deed, but a glimpse at Barton's bio made it clear that she probably had the skills and the smarts to pull it off herself if she wanted to. Her writing style seemed to Dex more argumentative than threatening, but he didn't discount her. He flagged her name to his file, along with snips from her posts. He was starting to wade through the other opponents of the Light of the Simulacrum when his system pinged. It was an unknown caller, but Dex picked up the heavy black handset on his desk. Anderson Dexter Investigations, he said professionally. He heard a deep laugh on the other end of the call. Andy, Max's voice crooned. You sound positively grown up. I'm impressed. Dex coughed out a laugh. I was wondering if you were at home. Andrea's working again, and I thought I could stop over for a coffee. If you're not busy investigating or something. Dex thought for a second. I could take a break, I guess, he said. Give me a half hour. I'm on the 18th floor of the East Tower. See you soon, Max said, and ended the call. Chapter 18. Dex had managed to splash some water on his face and make sure his tiny apartment wasn't too funky by the time he heard the door chime. He had his system open the door and he saw Max's long frame in the hallway, his face splitting into a wide grin. Come on in, Dex said. Sorry, it's kind of cramped. No problem, Max said, walking in and taking a seat on the edge of Dex's bed. Andrea's is only a hair bigger, and I've been living there with her for a week. He looked around the small apartment, then back at Dex. To tell the truth, I think she's getting a little sick of me. It can't be much fun for her to have her old dad around all the time. Dex grinned. I know what you mean, he said. You get used to living alone, then all of a sudden there's another body there. It gets pretty close pretty fast, I'd wager. Max grinned. That experience talking? He asked. Is your Miss Annabelle sharing this closet with you? Dex laughed without thinking. Not bloody likely, he said. He caught Max looking at him appraisingly. She's not the moving-in type, he explained, then turned to the zapper. Coffee? He asked, changing the subject. Please, Max said. Still with too much sugar and not enough milk. Max laughed. Yeah, I still take it the same way. Dex mixed the brews and put the two mugs into the zapper. When the machine was done, he handed Max the steaming cup with the darker liquid and took a sip of his own coffee. So I'll probably be heading back to Namerica soon, Max said after he'd had a taste of the dark brew. Oh, Dex said, and he heard the disappointment in his voice. How soon? He asked, then added, I have a gig coming up with this band I'm playing in. Really? Max said, his voice enthusiastic. You're still playing? That's fantastic. It's kind of a new thing, Dex said. I started playing virtual mandolin, but now I play a real one here and pipe it into the venue online. Cool, Max said, grinning. Yeah, Dex said, it is. So when's the gig? Tomorrow night, Dex said. I can give you a link to the bar in M-City if you want. That'd be great, Max said. Hey, he looked up at Dex, his eyes shining. I'm not leaving that soon. Maybe I could hang out here while you play, he asked. It would be awesome to get the double experience, I bet. Dex blanched. I don't know, he said. I haven't had anyone watch me play, not out here in, he counted the years, a few decades, I guess. Would have been when I was playing with you and Jenny. Come on, it'll be fine, Max said. It's just me. It would sort of be like old times. I bet I could even scrounge up a guitar. We could jam together after. He sounded like an excited kid, and Dex felt his old friend's excitement rub off on him. Okay, he said, and he heard his door chime again. Oh, that must be Andrea, Max said. I told her where I'd be in case she wanted something. Dex opened the door and froze. It wasn't Andrea at the door. It was Annabelle. So this is the famous Annabelle Lewis, Max said as Dex just stood there, his eyes darting wildly between the two of them. I've heard so much about you, Max continued, extending a hand to Annabelle. I was afraid I might not get a chance to meet you before I left. Annabelle was gracious enough and shook Max's hand. I'm afraid you have the advantage of me, she said politely. Max shot Dex a look, but didn't say anything to him. To Annabelle, he merely introduced himself. Maxime Voronin, he said. Maxime, Annabelle tried the name on for size. Max, Dex said, finally engaging in the situation. This is my old roommate, Max. Oh, Annabelle said, her eyes growing wide. She fought to control a frown and managed a well-mannered smile at Max. I see, she said. What a surprise. Tell me about it, Max said disarmingly. I haven't seen Andy in, what is it, 30 years, right? He looked toward Dex, who nodded robotically. Then some asshole walks smack into me in a bar, spilling beer all over my new shirt, and who is it but this guy here? He put his arm around Dex and made no sign of noticing Annabelle's growing stiffness. Dex noticed perfectly well, though, and slipped out from under Max's arm. Andy? Annabelle queried, looking at Dex with one eyebrow cocked. He's the only one who calls me that, Dex said simply. Old habits, Max said apologetically. We've known each other since we were barely whelps, and I'm not likely to change the way I think of him anytime soon. So, Annabelle said, looking at Dex, but addressing Max, how long are you staying here? She eyed the small apartment, and Dex saw her gaze track across the room. He's not staying here, Dex said hotly. He's visiting his daughter. She lives in the complex. Daughter? Annabelle blurted, before she remembered her manners and covered. How unusual. How old is she? She's a grown-up woman of 21 who loves her old dad, but is getting a little tired of having him underfoot, I think, Max said, grinning. She's trying to work, so I stopped over here to get out of her way. Andy was just being a gracious host and letting me hang out and pester him. He looked between Dex and Annabelle, then said, And it's about time that I stopped abusing that hospitality. He walked to the door and looked at Annabelle. I'm so happy to meet you, he said. I hope we can get together again, maybe at the gig tomorrow night? Annabelle shot Dex another glance, then said, Maybe. That sounds nice. Great, Max said. I'll try to tear Andrea away from her ones and zeros and get her to come over, too. It'll be a great party. He smiled at the two of them and, with a nonchalant wave, disappeared into the hallway. Neither Dex nor Annabelle said a word until they'd heard the clunk of a step on the downward spiral, and even then they waited until it was certain that Max was out of earshot. Dex closed the apartment door and turned to face Annabelle. So, she said, her face carefully neutral. That's the competition. I see. That's what the fancy night out was all about, she said angrily after they'd been around the subject a few times already. A little present to make up for the cuckolding, is that it? Damn it, Annabelle, Dex said. I'm not fucking him. You're your own person, Dex, she said. We never made any agreement about exclusivity. I've got no claim on you. For Christ's sake, Annabelle, Dex said, exasperated. I don't want anyone else. What you do... His voice trailed off. I can live with whatever you do. But regardless of whatever we did or didn't agree to, I love you, and I want to be with you. Just you. Do you understand that? Annabelle was quiet, facing away from Dex and staring out the window. Dex wanted to go over there and touch her, put a hand on her shoulder or something, but he knew that it wasn't the right thing. Not for her. So he waited. Finally, she spoke. Why didn't you tell me? She asked, her voice small. Wouldn't running into the person who was once the most important to you, someone you missed and ached for, wouldn't that be something you'd want to tell me? Wouldn't it be amazing news, the kind of thing you'd want to share? She wasn't looking at Dex, but he was pretty sure she was crying. I don't know, Dex said miserably. I don't know why I didn't tell you, he said, and sank down into the chair. He put his head in his hands and thought. It was so surreal, he said, talking into his hands. Seeing him again after all these years, and here of all places, I felt like, I don't know, like maybe it wasn't real, maybe it was just a dream. I know it wasn't, but it was so strange. He paused and looked up at Annabelle's turned back. And I was afraid, he said. Of what? Her quiet voice asked. Of this, Dex said. Afraid that you'd be jealous, he paused, weighing his words. Afraid that you'd think I would leave you for him. Annabelle was quiet, and Dex could see slight shivers in her shoulders. Finally, she said, What am I supposed to think? He's your long-lost love, and I'm just... Her voice faltered there, and she lowered her head. Dex couldn't stop himself and stood. He walked up behind her and felt her flinch as he put his arms around her from behind. You're my love now, he said. You once told me that I'm not the same man I was back then, back when I was with Max. And seeing him again makes me realize how true that is. The man I was then, sure, he might have dropped everything to run off with his old friend. But the man I am now, he put his head on Annabelle's shoulder, isn't going anywhere. Annabelle sniffled quietly, then shrugged her shoulders, subtly making Dex release his embrace. I have to go, she said, and looked at him quickly, then averted her gaze again. She managed to get to the door from the window without touching Dex and was opening the door before he could stop her. Annabelle, wait, he said plaintively as she walked into the hallway. She paused a brief moment before grabbing the downward spiral. Just give me a little time, she said with a small smile. I can't think out here. I'll call you. Then she grabbed the spiral's cable and disappeared past the floor of the lift. Dex felt like a heel. He didn't really know why he hadn't told Annabelle when he'd run into Max. Part of it was her jealousy. This wasn't the first instance of her assuming the worst. But part of it was that Max really had been central to Dex's life once, so central that for a lot of years after Max left, he barely had a life at all. Dex was so used to thinking that things would be different if only Max was here, that when he did appear, Dex worried that somehow that meant that everything had to change. Or maybe he really did still harbor some secret feelings for Max. He was angry with Annabelle, angry that she'd left before they could resolve the situation. But he knew that when she was upset, the last thing she wanted was to be physically present. He'd probably just made things worse by trying to hug her. He put his head in his hands and felt the beginnings of a throbbing headache. He was sitting there, feeling miserable, when a thought struck him. Annabelle really was not fond of the physical world, and the only reason she ever went out was to please him. She'd gotten better at it over the last year, just like Dex had become more at ease in the virtual world with her. But she still was never going to be the kind of person to just drop in. He was pondering this bit of extremely odd behavior when his messenger chirped annoyingly, and he paged over to see what was causing the ruckus. It was a reply from Jay Beck, the reformed Calvinist and self-professed opponent of the Light of the Simulacrum. Dex opened the basic text file and read, Dear Sir, thank you for the opportunity to discuss the Light of the Simulacrum. I look forward to discussing these godless impostors with you. However, as I do not participate in the so-called Marionette City interface, I am unable to meet with you using that technology. I propose a voice call at your convenience instead. Please send me a message with your preferred time, and I would be pleased to talk with you. Yours, Jay Beck. Dex hadn't had such a formal message since he was in school, and even then he suspected it was one of the teachers being pedantic on purpose. He sighed and took a chance on cold calling Beck. Unsurprisingly, the call was answered almost immediately. Mr. Dexter, a soft-spoken voice said, How nice to hear from you so quickly. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me, Dex said. So, what is your interest in the Light of the Simulacrum? Beck asked. I'm investigating the vandalism of their property, Dex said, not bothering to beat around the bush any longer. Property? Beck asked, sounding confused. Their temple in M City was hacked, Dex explained, and was not entirely surprised to hear Beck laugh loudly. Oh dear, Beck said. How delightfully amusing. And of course, you've read my critiques of their philosophy and immediately jumped to the absurd conclusion that I had something to do with this little malfunction. I need to follow every lead, Dex said, trying not to get engaged in the banter. Of course you do, Beck said, voice still jovial. Well, I confess that I am not overly distraught at this news. Might I ask, was the imaginary building destroyed? Or do those poor souls still have to upload themselves into that travesty of a church? Dex was not entirely sure how to deal with those questions. The building still stands, but I understand that it's not usable for the time being. Oh my, Beck said. The building still stands? Have those misguided pagans gotten their clutches into you, too? I feel I must point out that there is no building, merely a collection of computer bits that render the image of a building. So it most certainly does not still stand, as of course it never did. Dex heard Beck sigh, then carry on. To address your ultimate question, no, I was not responsible. I am no programmer, Mr. Dexter, so there is no way I could accomplish such a feat. I'd be happy to congratulate whoever did, however. He or she did those people a great service. I am sure that most of the people who claim to follow the Light of the Simulacrum are truly seeking a spiritual truth, and the sooner they can get away from the false prophets, the sooner they can be turned to the one true light of God. Dex could feel the conversation slipping into a dimension he did not wish to enter. Can you think of anyone else I had to speak with? Dex asked. Anyone who might have the skills to do this? I'm afraid not, Beck said, a little sadly. My views are considered too extreme by most of my fellowship, and I have quite a bit of trouble finding like-minded individuals. It is only a matter of time, though, and God's will shall be done. Yes, well, Dex stammered. Thank you very much for your time. Feel free to call again, Mr. Dexter, Beck said. It's always a pleasure to have someone with whom to discuss ideas. Indeed, Dex said and broke the call. What a nut, he thought, then promptly went back to feeling sorry for himself. You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wame. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.